The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success with Kimberly Stewart. If you are looking to make a difference to your work life as well as your personal life, this program is for you. We'll have stories, identify tools and techniques to help you in your everyday success, and answer your questions and hear your ideas. Now, here is your host, Kimberly Stewart.
Welcome, Voice America listeners, and thank you so much for tuning in to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. I'm so excited about this show today, where we have Simon Hartley of Be World Class. He is going to talk to us about how high performers are so essential to business and sports teams. You know, through my career, I've been very lucky in having many high performers on my team, and it has been the most beneficial way of executing projects and my business. I'm interested and looking forward to hearing Simon's take on how you encourage and create high performers, how they have impacted businesses, and from a sports team's perspective, how it is so essential to have that mentality and that set mindset of being a high performer. I hope that all of you will listen and pick up tips and tidbits on how you can be a high performer and how you can get your team members to become high performers and how it benefits everyone in the organization, whether you're a business, a sports team, government, nonprofit, anywhere you are working. So, Simon, thank you for coming. And let me tell the listeners a little bit about your background, and then we'll get right into it. Simon Hartley is a globally respected sports psychology consultant and performance coach. He helps athletes and business people to get their mental game right. For almost 20 years, Simon has worked with gold medalists, world record holders, top five world-ranked professional athletes, and championship-winning teams. In 2011, he published his first book, Peak Performance Every Time, which was followed by, in 2012, How to Shine, and in 2013, Two Lengths of the Pool. Simon has also delivered an array of Be World Class events and conferences. For almost 10 years, Simon has also applied the principles of sports psychology to business, education, healthcare, and charity sector. This has included projects with some of the world's leading corporations and foremost executives. He is an international professional speaker, delivering keynotes across the world. Welcome, Simon, and thank you so much for coming on board as one of my guests to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So let's get started. What, if you would, tell the listeners about Be World Class and how your journey on starting Be World Class.
Sure. I guess it started when I failed some exams. When I was about 17, I wanted to be a pilot in the Navy, and I failed my flying aptitude tests. They told me I was completely uncoordinated. I should have spent more time playing computer games as a kid. I was busy climbing trees and getting muddy, you know, like boys do. And when I failed my aptitude tests, I sort of lost my reason for studying maths and physics and, you know, all those subjects I'd picked in order to become a pilot. So I had a little rethink and decided I would study sport, went off to university and studied sports science. And within sports science, there are lots of disciplines. You know, you study physiology and you study the mechanics of movement, even sociology of sport and philosophy. And gradually you sort of narrow down into one area of specialism. And psychology for me was the area that I found most intriguing, most interesting. And I had a tutor who was very, very engaging and brought the whole thing to life. So gradually I started to study psychology in more depth. and went out into the world of work after finishing my degree and gaining some experience in professional sports whilst I was studying, and started to apply what I'd learned with athletes. Gradually, I guess I also got a wider perspective. I got challenged a few times. Once upon a time, I got challenged to apply this stuff I call sports psychology into a business context with a sales team. It was an insurance sales team. And so I walked in, I viewed them all as athletes and applied the same sorts of tools I'd been applying with the athletes. And all of a sudden, we found that these salespeople started to perform better as well. And I guess it sort of rolled from there. I had a real intrigue as to why those athletes who became world class stuck out from the rest. What was it that they had that the others didn't? How could they hit their peak and perform at their best consistently? And why did the athlete who actually wasn't the tallest or the strongest or had the biggest hands or the biggest feet actually end up becoming the fastest swimmer? So I asked all these daft questions and followed them up and studied and researched, and essentially that's how Be World Class grew.
Wonderful. And it's interesting how oftentimes, a quote unquote failure can be the biggest opportunity that you have in being successful and taking you on to those journeys. And it definitely sounds like that was the case for you. And I think that that's always why we try to, or I at least try, and I encourage the listeners to try to look at the bright side and the positive side. There's an opportunity there, even if it seems like there's a failure on your side at that moment. So it definitely sounds like you did great things from your initial failing of those exams and really founded Be World Class and helped both sports teams and businesses perform higher.
So, yeah.
Go ahead.
You're right. It's unusual sometimes when we look back and we see the paths that we've taken and how they came about. And lots of the world-class performers that I've worked with and studied over the years have got similar stories to tell. Kenny, who was he's a twice Michelin star chef, he fell into working in a kitchen because he also failed to be a pilot in the Royal Air Force. And James, who became world barista champion, fell into it after having done a number of random things and deciding he didn't want to sell gas and electricity and he didn't want to be a croupier, and then he discovered coffee. And it is amazing how those things happen sometimes, and it's often tempting to view them as failures and get all depressed about them when actually they could be the opening of a new chapter that's a very valuable one.
Yes, absolutely. And I do try to, now that I've recognized that myself, and I try to, whenever I feel down and feel like I didn't succeed or didn't quite achieve what I wanted or didn't, or got rejected from something, I go, you know what? There's an opportunity here and there's a reason here. It's just a matter of finding out what it is and what path I'm now going to be taking. So I think that that's important advice for everyone to remember, that there are reasons, and just look for the positive and it will come. It may seem obvious, but why do businesses need high performers?
I think most businesses understand that their performance and the performance of their people are inextricably linked. It's not just service-orientated businesses. I think businesses in every sector, whether they're manufacturing businesses or industrial businesses, they also realize that the performance of their people is absolutely critical, because the people make decisions. Even when you think computers or policies or algorithms are making decisions, somebody had to program those in the first place. Somebody had to draw up the policy in the first place. And that when you look at the impact that decision making and people's personal execution, the execution of their skills, has on a business, we start to understand that the vast majority of the business performance is linked to the performance of its people. So we need to think about how we think and what goes on between the ears of our people, and how much impact that has on the performance of the business.
Yes, absolutely. Can anyone be a high performer, or how do you become a high performer and sustain that?
When I started looking at athletes, I was really interested initially about what it was that those athletes who could consistently perform at their peak had. What did they do differently than the others? And I started to notice that there were sort of three things that they consistently had. They had focus, they had confidence, and they had motivation. And because they consistently had those three things, they were able to perform at their best almost all of the time. And their performance varied very little. And so when you actually understand that there are some very tangible things that high performers do, you can also understand everybody has the ability to hone their focus and control their confidence and be motivated. So it's the combination of those that, and those three things are interdependent. They're all linked together. So if we want to become confident or we want to become motivated, we have to understand that we need to be focused and that our focus is directed by our choice. We choose where to put our focus. So we have control over those really critical things that impact on our performance.
Yeah. That, you know, if you are a high performer, you know, because, you know, I'd like to think that I've had throughout, as I said before, throughout my career, I've been lucky to have many high performers, and I like to think of myself as a high performer. But how do you bring, you know, I haven't always had the full team be a high performance. I know who my high performers are, and I go and I proactively engage them. But how do I bring the rest of the team up so that the team is a high performance team?
It's a good question. And again, it's one that's really interested me over the past few years. I think you can, by understanding the mechanics by which people do perform, if we understand that focus, confidence, and motivation are critical, we can also understand how we can engineer those in others. How can we help other people to hone their focus? How can we help them to control their confidence and master their motivation so that they can perform consistently well? It's something that I see very good coaches and very good leaders and managers doing. I've seen some very, very famous sports coaches do the complete opposite and actually pull the plug out from underneath people and decrease their confidence and demotivate them. So as leaders and managers, we have an awful lot of influence over people because we can help them master those things. But I think it even goes further than that. We can help people to do the things that actually make them great. We can help them go beyond their comfort zone. We can help them work under situations that they normally perceived were pressurized and that they felt pressure in. We can help them to really push the envelope of their performance, encourage them to take responsibility for what they do, encourage them to be self-critical and look at their performance in a critical way so that they can look for ways to improve it. I think all of those things are influences that leaders can have over their team.
Yep, absolutely. And I know that when I look at my team and when I see that, you know, there's a person there that doesn't seem to be performing at their best, I try to work and figure out, you know, why is it? Is it because we're asking that person to do something that's not in their wheelhouse, not a strength of theirs? It's uncomfortable, and not that you should avoid uncomfortable, but look at the situations that people are in and try to make sure that they're leveraging their strengths, they're growing some, and they're feeling challenged and motivated and engaged in the work that is being done. And if they're not, you know, making sure that you try to help either change their work or change their motivation. And sometimes it's actually going, you know, this isn't a good fit, that they can fit and perform at a higher level, maybe on another team that leverages their skills much better.
Sure. Yeah. So, I think there's got to be a base understanding that being the best you can be is actually hard work. Mm-hmm. Pushing people to be high performers is also hard work. There's got to be a really good reason why they want to become high performers and they want to push themselves outside of their comfort zone and challenge themselves harder. The vast majority of people would actually prefer to do as little as it takes to just to get by. So it's got to be a powerful reason to do it, a real compelling reason. But I think also, as you said, there's probably a reason why people aren't performing. And if we can identify what that is, I've got a little audit that I just tend to use, a four-point audit. Have they got the knowledge? Have they got the skills? Have they got the resources? Have they got the desire? Normally, I find if people have got those four, they will perform. But if they're missing one of them, they struggle. And sometimes it's the desire piece. That's the bit that they're missing. They haven't got a really, really good reason to be a high performer. I mean, if we look at that bell-shaped curve, it tells us that there are very, very few people who will be exceptionally low performers or exceptionally high performers if they're left to their own devices. Most people will gravitate towards the middle. Mm-hmm. And if we can create a culture and an environment where it's actually really beneficial for me as an individual to be a high performer as well, and I can see everybody around me is also striving to be a high performer, we actually can shift that bell curve to the right towards the high performer end. But the honest truth is, I don't think we'll get everybody to want to be a high performer all of the time. I think there'll always be people who kick against it and resist it. And I think we also have to understand that people have the right to fail and the right to be low performers. But that we also might have to decide that they're not right for this organization.
Right. Yep. Well, with that, it is time for a commercial break. So we are talking to Simon Hartley, Be World Class, and we will see you after this break.
Everybody needs expert advice when they look to develop their personal brand. Join Rasheryl McCrary for The Leader and the Muse. Rasheryl and her guests will bring you practical tips and tools to help you build your brand in ways that propel you into greater personal and business success. For strategies, stories, and much more, tune in to the Voice America Business Channel every Friday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for The Leader and the Muse. And get ready to take your brand to the next level.
Join Patricia Raskin, the host of Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com, Monday at 11 Pacific. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call to Positive Living, Mondays at 11 Pacific Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success with Kimberly Stewart. We want to hear from you today with your questions and comments. Please call into the program today at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to kstewart@steppingstone-llc.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back, Voice America listeners. Thank you for coming back. You're listening to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. I'm your host, Kimberly Stewart, and I have Simon Hartley, Be World Class, on with me, and we're talking about how to be a high performer, how to encourage your team members to be high performers. As we've talked about, I've had the fortune of having many high performers on my team. I'd like to think of myself a high performer, but we've also talked about how it's hard work to sustain high performance. And I do know that I have at times not been a high performance, and I've recognized it and I've changed. And that was how we ended the last segment, was talking about, you know, sometimes if you aren't at your highest performance or your team members aren't at your highest performance, look at it and audit it and try to see if this is the right fit. And sometimes it's not. And you want to make sure that you and your team and everyone involved is in the best situation possible and at their highest performance possible. And if they're not, that sometimes it's time to move and make a change so that we can be the most productive we can be. So Simon, thank you for sharing and coming on and being my guest. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the high performance, but do you have some of your favorite success stories of helping a business leader or team or organization with developing high performers and working with the world class?
Yeah. One of the businesses that I started working with fairly early on is a law firm in the UK. Their strategy depends on them being absolutely excellent at what they do, not just in terms of the legal service that they deliver, but also in terms of the customer service they deliver, the environment they create for customers, the experience that they create. So we've now got an environment where everybody's pushing to become better, be the best they can possibly be. Again, it's hard because there are lots of people in that organization who traditionally would just like to get by. They just like to do what they do. But they have a real intrinsic understanding now that being average is not good enough. Being average actually makes them extremely vulnerable as a business. So the focus most recently has been on the leadership team, helping them to become a really robust and effective unit, helping them interact on a different level, helping them to think on a different level. A big part of that process requires them to put their egos in the backpack and for them to engage with each other on a much more kind of authentic basis and challenge each other harder, allow themselves to be challenged by each other harder, have more what I call brutally honest discussions with each other. And the outcomes are very, very positive. They are thinking differently. They're behaving differently. They're doing things differently. They're seeing the business improve in front of them because of the decisions that they're now making and the actions that they're taking.
I mean, you mentioned, you know, people having to put their egos in the backpack. And when you're talking about extremely successful business leaders, you know, how do you do that? That first, you know, getting them started in doing that. Once they see results, you know that they can see the results. They know that it's working. But that first step of doing it, how do you get them to do that? How do you get them to put their ego aside and have some of the brutally honest discussions that they need to have in order to reach the performance level that they want their organization to reach?
Yeah, there's a need for them in this situation. There's a commercial need for them to improve as a team. And we've talked about the ways that they do that. They can understand that in order for the team to perform, they need to put the egos to one side. It's not easy for them to do, but we also understand that the job of the business is very, very simple and that we need to align our personal jobs with the job of the business. So if the job of the business is to deliver the best service possible to the clients, then my job as a member of that team is to make sure the business delivers the best possible service. Therefore, my job can't be to look good or to win the argument or to attract the attention or to have the power, because those things don't necessarily contribute to the job of the business. So we looked at that in real detail. Which agenda's at play here? What are you trying to do in this situation? Are you genuinely trying to drive the business forward, or are you trying to look good? And because we can draw a distinction between those things, we can now focus the conversations on the team and on the business, which means that when we give critical feedback, it's not personal. It's not to make me look better than you. It's because we need to answer this question to make the business as strong as we can possibly make it.
Right. Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I have struggled with I think in many organizations might have similar issues is we always want the best resource, the best team member, the best person on our team and as part of our organization. But sometimes, you know, identifying that in that recruiting process is hard. And then if you are able to identify who you think is going to be a high performer on your team, getting them to join the team can be even harder. Do you have any advice for folks on how to first you identify it during that recruiting process, and then second, how do you attract them into your organization?
Yeah, I delivered a keynote just last week to some business leaders in the City of London, banks and finance leaders. There are some principles that world-class teams employ and have employed for centuries and centuries. They're based on very, very simple principles. First of all, they test people. They actually make people qualify to become a part of the team. You could see it as far back as Indian tribes on the plains of North America. In order to become a part of the tribe, you had to go on a vision quest. The vision quest was 4 or 5 days out in the wilderness. You had to come back enriched from that experience. And on that basis, you qualified yourself as an adult in the tribe. And you were considered to be, a full member of the tribe. Now, really good organizations, whether they're sports organizations, whether they're special forces units or whatever they happen to be, they will ask people to qualify to become a member. And it's more than just a conversation. There's a test. And the test is very, very specific to the demands of that organization. Usually it's quite tough. And therefore, people have to invest an awful lot of themselves in the process of getting through the door. World-class organizations do that. They also, in tandem, they create like a magnetic quality around themselves that attracts talent so that people want to go through those tests and become a part of the organization. The organization therefore becomes better in the process because it attracts the people who really want to be there. So there's a process around recruit that actually looks very different than most corporations' recruitment policies. But actually, when you look at the way that the very best teams in the world attract their talent, that's the basis on which they do it.
So do you have any specific examples or fun examples that you like to think back to of, you know, some of the organizations and the tests that they put their recruits in and any stories out of that?
I think one of the most amusing was a leisure dining business, the cafe restaurant, who were recruiting potential managers, and they wanted to make sure that the managers had both practical skills as well as theoretical ability and as well as paper qualifications. So they asked their potential managers to make a smoothie. The smoothie had a few ingredients. It had some bananas and some orange juice and some strawberries. They gave them the equipment. They gave them some washing up bowls and some water to wash their things afterwards. They gave them the equipment to make it with. And one of the potential recruits who had a master's degree in international business management peeled a banana and subsequently put the peeled banana in a washing up bowl with soapy water in it in order to wash the banana before he made his smoothie with it. Clearly indicating that he didn't really have just a base practical skill around food. They needed to know that they're in a cafe restaurant business. Their managers know something about food. Washing a banana in soapy water probably wasn't the way to prove that.
No. So he just brought up images also of the TV show The Apprentice with Donald Trump, and it sounds like he put his cast through various tests, and it'll accumulated into one apprentice. So, and I know that everything that has to do with Donald Trump is high performance. So again, it's another justification of, you know, put them through the hard test, and if they are motivated and dedicated and have the focus, they will get through it, and they will be a high performer. And then it's a determination of whether they're right for your organization or company.
Yeah, and I think some of those tests, when you look at some of the special forces units, the SAS have a brutal test. Only 1 in 10 qualifies. There are people that die in the selection process. You've really, really got to want to become a member of that team in order to just apply. In order to fill in the application form, you have to want to do it.
Right.
And there's that quality that then ensures the SAS only get the top quality people.
Yep. And I think it is so important that, you know, whenever we're in our recruiting and the organization may not have these tests and these extreme tests of your desire and focus and your skill, but even through that questioning process that is your typical recruiting process, you know, it's a sign of don't be afraid of asking the hard hard questions and making them be a little creative, making them think on their feet, making them go through that process, because it only benefits the organization, you and the organization. And if they can't get through those questions, then they probably aren't right for your organization. I've had some folks who have been concerned about, well, that's a really hard question if they haven't had time to think about it. But isn't that the type of thing that you want to do if your organization isn't one that has these situational behavioral tests that you go through? You still want the best of the best, and asking those hard questions is one way to see how that person performs under pressure and under some stress, if not in the test situation.
Yeah, and you want to know how people perform in discomfort. You want to know how they perform when there's some pressure around. And you want to know how they respond to failure and making mistakes and all those sorts of things. So the best way to do it is to test those things and find out and let the evidence tell you that that's how they perform. Because if you ask them, of course, they'll tell you they perform really well.
Right. Absolutely. I think my children, after every test, say that they did great. And sometimes they did. Other times it wasn't as great as they indicated that they had done. So, but with that, it is time for a commercial break. We are talking with Simon Hartley of Be World Class. And come back after this break so that we can hear more about how to be a high performer and his work with the sports teams. See you after this break.
Is your business model robust enough? In today's ever-changing business environment, people are working to transform themselves, their futures, and their business. Tune in to Business Reinvention with your host, Nancy Lynn. To stay ahead of the game in business, you have to constantly reinvent yourself and your organization. With Nancy's experience and that of her guest experts, you'll learn from stories of inspiration, innovation, and forward thinking. Listen for Business Reinvention, live every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Leadership is a vital skill set in today's competitive global economy. Being a leader is not enough. To succeed, you must optimize your performance and know how to imbue others in your organization with leadership skills. Practical, actionable leadership insights are the focus of Leadership Development News, hosted each Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, by Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler on the Voice America Business Channel. Drs. Greenberg and Nadler, who coach global leaders on how to be most effective, will share their insights and contacts. The path to leadership excellence begins here.
You are tuned in to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success with Kimberly Stewart. We want to hear from you today with your questions and comments. Please call into the program today at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to kstewart@steppingstone-llc.com. Now back to the show.
Thank you for coming back. We are talking with Simon Hartley, and we are hearing about his stories on how to be world-class and how to be a high performance. We have focused our conversation primarily around business organizations, but he has done a lot of work and actually started his work with the sports team and the athletes. So we'd like to explore a little bit and hear a little bit about his work with those sports teams. You know, Simon, you know, as I just said, we've been talking about businesses and organizations, but in your intro and your journey to Be World Class, you did talk about how you were first focused on the sports teams and how these athletes became Olympian athletes and gold medalist athletes and real winners. Do the same principles apply to the sports teams as to businesses?
Yeah, exactly the same. And it took me an embarrassingly long time to realize why. I forgot that all the athletes and the business people, everybody, they're all human beings. And it struck me after a little while that what I'd been doing all along was not actually sports psychology. It was human psychology in truth. And because I'd only been applying it to sport in the first few years of my career, I perceived that it was sports psychology. But in truth, it was always human psychology. So Nowadays, I think if I went into a business and said we're about to apply sports psychology to this business, they might wonder whether it would work or not, and they might see some barriers and some transitional problems. However, I now go into businesses and say the myth is that we're applying sports psychology to business. The truth is we're applying human psychology to business, and I apply human psychology to sport. Here are the principles that allow athletes to perform. They can also help you. The truth is also that I learn as much from working in business to apply back to sport as I do from sport to business. So I'll learn things from chief execs that I'll apply back to sports coaches, and from business organizations that I'll apply back to sports organizations. And even from, you know, looking around and researching on the psychology of performance, there's some things that we can learn from stock traders. There's some stuff that we can learn from educational settings, and kids are wonderful for teaching us the basics of how to perform and learn. But most recently in my studies of teams and how teams perform well, I've actually been looking beyond human beings to animal teams, and animal teams are superb. They're far better than human teams. There's so much we can learn from them to apply back to human beings. It's they're very good at teamwork. We're amateurs.
So like what? You know, what can we learn from them, and how can we apply it? What have you seen, and what are some of the theories that you have?
Well, animal teams, they work on a very, very simple basis. They've got a problem to solve as a team, as a collective. So when it comes down to decisions such as who's going to be our leader, they'll appoint the leader who's got the most experience, the one who's got the most knowledge. If it's, for example, navigating to a food source, who's been there before. And the leader will be appointed on the basis that they're one that's going to help us get there, or most likely to help us get there. Human beings don't appoint leaders on that basis. We appoint leaders according to who wants the job, who's most confident, who's loudest, who's got the perceived credibility. We also screw the whole thing up because leadership normally comes with more recognition, more power, maybe a higher paycheck, a bigger car. All of these things form another agenda. And so sometimes our leaders aren't the people who are best to help us as a collective to solve this task. Maybe they're the people who want the power most, or the people who want to look best, or, you know, there's some other ego related agenda to it. So yeah, animal teams on a number of different levels, that's one. Yeah, you know, collective decision making, they're better. They seem to have stripped everything back to the basics and kept with what works rather than clouding it with what doesn't.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you help when you're working with the athletes and the sports teams? How do you help athletes get out of the so-called slump or return to play after an injury?
Yeah, there's that little spiral that we were talking about before, focus, mm-hmm. confidence and motivation. That forms the basis of it. And normally, if we want to interrupt that cycle somewhere, the best place to do it is to help people to refocus, to help them focus on the things that they should be focused on and have their mind in the right thing at the right time. There's a pattern that athletes tend to get into when they're not performing well, and that's that they're not quite focused on the right thing at the right time. And because they're not, they make a mistake. And because they make a mistake, they start to overthink things. They try too hard. They force things. And then they go and make a bigger mistake, which of course then impacts on their confidence. And then rather than having their focus in the right place at the right time, they're focused on trying not to make a mistake.
Right.
And the whole thing collapses. It just sort of disappears down a wormhole. If we want to interrupt that cycle, if we can get them to just focus back on the right thing at the right time, then they'll start to perform well. When they start to perform well, they're confident. When they start to become confident, they think less and just go and do it, and they trust themselves. And then because they're having fun doing that, they're more motivated and they want to go and do it again. So we've got these two spirals, one negative spiral, one positive spiral. And often just re-engineering focus is the way to turn a negative spiral into a positive one.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I like to I can relate to so well with this particular situation is my son is a baseball player, a little league baseball player, but you know, the kids, I think you see a lot of the similar things, even if they're little athletes, they're still the athletes. And when he gets into a slump, it's hard to get him out, but then reminding him of, you know, when you did the home run, you know, when you hit it over the fence, think of those things and that feel of the swing of the bat and focus on that, opposed to, you know, well, actually we don't usually refer him back to the strikeout that he did. So we would try to think of that home run, think about going over the fence and focus on that opposed to anything that's happened in the past. And sounds like that's similar advice that you give your athletes that you coach and work with.
Yeah. And they're very simple things. Watching the spin of the ball, feeling a club or a bat or a racket in your hand and making sure you're balanced and all those sorts of things. Normally those are the things that when athletes focus on those things, they perform really, really well. I mean, the truth is they never forgot how to perform in the first place. They just interfered with it by thinking too much. So if we can get them to focus on the spin of the ball, they'll watch the ball. And because they're watching the ball, their brain and their body will do the rest. They're perfectly capable of hitting it without thinking about it. In fact, they're more capable of hitting it without thinking about it. So if we can just get them to focus on the spin of the ball or pick up the ball earlier, whatever it happens to be, they'll perform really well. So, yeah, they are simple, simple things.
Yep, and the same principles apply to young athletes as to the elite athletes, you know, because it's the human psychology, as you had recognized, and nothing specific to young athlete psychology or the professional athlete psychology. It's human psychology.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yep. What has been your most inspirational story working with athletes? And do you have any advice you can give any young athlete out there or parent with young athletes?
Yeah, sure. Quite a few of the athletes that I've either worked with or studied over the years started off really being a nobody. The athlete that I worked with for probably about 7 to 8 years, swimmer called Chris Cook. Chris, at age 18 or 19, didn't make the top four swimmers in his local city squad. In swimming, the sort of conventional wisdom is that if you haven't made it, if you're not on the international stage or on the radar aged 18 or 19, you're not going to be. Because he's going to finish at 25. So he failed to make the top four in the city of Newcastle at his first attempt. He went back a year later and he got in at the second attempt. But he finished as the seventh fastest in history in his event.
Wow.
So there's a guy who came from being nowhere and during a period of 10 years worked and worked and worked on his game to become one of the best in the world. And his last ever race was an Olympic final in Beijing in 2008. And he retired after Beijing and he was getting quicker even then, but he also was getting more injured and being injured more often because that happens to athletes. But finished his career saying, "I've done as well as I could possibly do." And one of our great British double Olympic champion rowers, he said to me, "You know, when I was at school, I was either last or second to last in the school cross country. I really didn't see myself as being or having the potential to be an Olympic athlete." And yet he finished as a double Olympic champion, double gold medalist. One of the world record holders, and this isn't just a story that will inspire people with young kids, but inspire people who are a little bit older than that. Andy McMenemy established a world record by running 66 ultra marathons in 66 days. And he finished his last one on his 50th birthday, but on his 45th birthday, he wasn't a runner.
Wow, that is inspirational and amazing. And with that, we have it's time for another commercial break. So stay tuned, and we will be for some final words, and we will see you after this break.
Our workplace is dynamically changing. How do you stay ahead of the curve with respect to learning and training? Tune in every week to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development with host Pamela Robinson. You'll learn about real-world strategies, solutions, and resources that will showcase these changes and keep you ready for what's next. The Future of Workforce Learning and Development is heard live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
What are the reasons that over three-quarters of small businesses fail within 3 years? Why do 70% of U.S. women-owned businesses make less than $50,000 a year? What causes mid-sized companies to stagnate? Although today many fundamentals of business remain the same, there are critical current changes that are not being acknowledged, and the result is costly. Tune in to Moving Forward with host Jen Sabin. We'll discuss the core reasons and plans of action to keep your business moving forward. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Business.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are tuned in to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success with Kimberly Stewart. We want to hear from you today with your questions and comments. Please call into the program today at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to kstewart@steppingstone-llc.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. You are listening to Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. I'm your host, Kimberly Stewart, and I have Simon Hartley of Be World Class on, and we are talking about high performance, both in the business as well as in sports. And it's been enjoyable to listen to some tips and tidbits on how to not only attract high performers, but also how to help your team be a high performance team and how to inspire athletes, whether you're a parent of an athlete or you are following athletes, how to inspire them and take their inspiration and be apply the high performance to your world and to your work and to your team. So, Simon, thank you so much for joining us, and I really have enjoyed talking with you about high performance and Be World Class and the businesses and sports teams and the stories that you have shared with us.
My pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I do for all of my guests, and you are no exception, is I have a few questions here that we ask at the end of each one of them. And so the first one, especially since this is Stepping Stones to Everyday Success, we'd like to hear how you define success and whether you feel in that definition you have achieved success.
Okay. Traditionally, I think I have defined success as achieving my potential. The problem is the older I've got, I'm not quite sure what my potential is. I keep getting close to it, and then it keeps disappearing over the horizon again. So I keep chasing it, and it keeps disappearing over the horizon again. So I've come to think that that's probably a redundant definition of success. So now I'm trying to do what I see world-class people doing on a regular basis, which is to be better today than I was yesterday and better tomorrow than I am today. And if I can see myself progressing, even if it's by tiny amounts, then I'm going to sort of get the view that I'm being successful.
Yep, absolutely. And that is what we are all about on Stepping Stones to Every Success, is that the small successes help you move forward to achieving your larger success, whatever that success may be and however you may define that success. So I think that that goes right in line with what we are all about on this show. What do you do when you have a bad day, and how do you get over it?
Again, having watched really successful athletes and world-class people over many, many years, they always have the ability to learn and get stronger from any setback. In fact, most of them don't even view them as setbacks. They're just opportunities. So I try and get stronger from it, try and learn everything I can from it. And it does give you a remarkable feeling of confidence when you go into that situation next time, because I've watched athletes who have struggled. They know why they've come out of the competition, worked on it and practiced it. And when they go back in next time, they know they're better. They might not think they're perfect, but then again, many of us are never going to be perfect. But they know they're better, so they go back in more confident. And I try and adopt that. Just make sure I use the experience.
Right. And that is what we've talked about, you know, at the beginning of the show and periodically throughout the show, as well as in past shows, though, of, you know, that when you've had a bad day or when something didn't work the way that you had wanted it to work, you know, there might be a silver lining or something positive that comes out of it. And to get over it and move on and find what that opportunity is that you now have that you wouldn't have had otherwise. So I think that that is right in line with what we've always been talking about on this show. So, again, we're stepping stones to everyday success. So do you have any practical advice you can give others on how to help them be more successful every day?
Yeah, I think knowing your job is critical. Understanding what your job is in the simplest possible terms. What are you looking to achieve? And it's not an outcome. Know the processes and be able to focus on the processes. I see lots of people who don't execute the processes well because they're so tied up in the outcome. They've got their minds in the future on what they want to achieve and where they're going, which is fine, but you have to execute every step to get there. So know the processes, focus on them, and once you've delivered them, evaluate the processes, not the results. Don't judge the results. Often we're not in control of the result. There are too many variables at work. So if we go back to evaluating how well we execute, I'll often ask athletes when they finish a performance, I'll ask them how they think they did. They'll tell me the result and possibly why they won or lost. And I'll say to them, no, I don't want to know about that. I want to know how good was your game plan and how well did you execute it. That's the bit I'm interested in.
Right. Well, and the government contract work is, I have the government as my client often. And whenever we go up for a renewal of the contract, you know, I make sure that people are focused on we need to continue executing well. That is the team's focus. That's what we do. Because if we don't execute today or tomorrow well, then we will not get a contract. And don't worry about that renewal. That is other people's job to make sure that they do what they need to do to renew the contract. We need to execute and make sure we are successful in supporting our client and doing the best that we can ever do for this client. And everything else will fall into place.
Absolutely.
Similar. So, you know, we are in December and we are looking forward to the next year. And 2014. Do you do New Year's resolutions? And what are you looking forward to in 2014? And do you have any inspirational and motivational words for the listeners?
Yeah, I don't do resolutions, no. They confuse me because although this is a good time of year to reflect and see whether you are on purpose, if something's really important to you, surely it's important in March and June and October, not just on January 1st, if it's genuinely important. New Year's resolutions confuse me a bit. I see lots of people making New Year's resolutions and they sort of fizzle out by maybe the end of January, if you're lucky, probably the middle.
Right.
And it's probably because they didn't mean that much in the first place. There was, you know, oh, maybe I need to construct a New Year's resolution. What should it be? Maybe I'll lose some weight. Let's go on to Amazon and buy some diet books. No. If it's really important, you look after yourself anyway. And if you need to make it really important, the way to do it is not to buy a diet book. The way to do it is to realize that actually my health is really important to me. And there's a reason why I need to look after myself, not just in January, but every day.
Yep, absolutely. Well, with that, it's actually time to end the show. It's been a pleasure, Simon, talking with you. I've been inspired. I have lots of tips and tidbits I can apply to my teams and my business. So thank you so much. And I actually, for one, agree with you with New Year's resolutions. I don't do them either. And I look at throughout the year of what are the things I want to do better and improve, and I try to do it when I come up with those ideas during the year. Thank you, Simon, for joining us on Stepping Stones to Everyday Success.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I hope everyone has a great week and finds some stepping stones to their success from this show. Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us this week for Stepping Stones to Everyday Success. Please join your host, Kimberly Stewart, again next Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. This week, take one more step to find your success. Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.